about Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton with Islands in the Stream. Now, I'm moving on, and it's hard to believe that families who are entitled to a medical card but don't avail of the option spend nearly €500 more on private health insurance than those who do. That's according to new research from the Economic and Social Research Institute. The paper finds that while take-up of medical cards amongst families is higher than that for individuals, some are still not opting to get one. Why is that? Because the SRI says that they estimate that 31% of eligible individuals do not take up a medical card. We have to find out more because Claire Keane joins us now from the SRI. She's a senior research officer with the organisation. Good morning, Claire.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
I mean, when we think about the value of a medical card and what it can mean to families, given the expense that we encounter with regard to medical needs and this, that and the other, it's quite perplexing to understand why a third of eligible individuals do not take up a medical card. Why so?
Yeah, so there, you know, as you say, it's a substantial number that don't seem to be taking up that entitlement. There can be a few different reasons. The first can be just a lack of knowledge. People may not know about the scheme's existence, so a lot of us probably are well familiar with it, but for people who don't know about the card, it's a, you know, entitlement. Having the card means that you can get free GP care, free hospital care, free prescriptions with a very small charge. And also there's sort of additional benefits that it can knock-on effects, like you can have more entitlement to, say, public health nursing and public physiotherapy. Even for people with children, you can get free school transport and you don't pay state exam fees. So as you said, the benefits are very substantial of holding the card. The first reason that we sort of looked at was just a lack of knowledge. Do people just not know that they're entitled? Or else they may feel that they are not entitled to it, that their income is too high. So myself, when we sort of started this research, I was sort of surprised at how many things against your income you could allow. So for example, you take off your taxes, you take off your USC, you take off your social insurance. You can also allow all your housing costs, so mortgage or rent, childcare costs, travel to work costs. So those costs can be really people. So people may see the income limit for the medical card and think, oh, well, my income's too high. But actually, when you reduce your income by all those costs, you could well be under the limit. So that's the thing I'd encourage people is to have a look at the limit. So, for example, a couple with three children under 16, the limit's $384 a week. So you can have that much after allowing all those costs. Medical card.
I think that point is actually, it's interesting you make that point, because I think most people think of the gross figure, not exactly. In terms of the net figure, and immediately assume that. But there's the other aspect as well that people feel, if I'm on a medical card, I have to avail of the public health system, and I'll be on long waiting lists for months, possibly even years, and I'd be better off taking out private health insurance.
Yes, and that could be part of it. So if we look at all of those families that are eligible for the medical card, of those who don't take up the card, 81% of them are paying for private health insurance. So it's 41% of them are paying for private health insurance compared to 11% who hold a medical card. So you're quite right. People may prefer to have private health insurance and use the private health system. But what I would say is there's nothing stopping you having both. So we see a lot of families who are entitled to medical cards and still go ahead and pay for private health insurance. But private health insurance doesn't tend to cover the same kind of costs. You'd rarely get your full GP costs covered by private health insurance, all your medication, all of those things. So there's nothing stopping people having both. One really worrying thing we did find in the research is that of the families who are eligible for a card but don't take it up, they're much more likely to report having an unmet health need due to financial reasons. So that's worrying, because it suggests that there are some people out there that don't know they're entitled to the medical card. So it's not that they don't have the health need met because there's waiting lists. They're saying they can't afford to. So that is something that's quite worrying. And given that the medical card could likely, if it say they can't afford to go to GP, the medical card would cover that. That's something that's quite worrying, and a worrying thing that we found in the research. Another thing can be, you know, if you look at the form is quite long. So there's this burden in having to actually go and sit and fill in the form and provide all the information. But you can also do it now online. So I'd encourage people, you know, to have a look, go online, look at the forms, put the sort of income limits and take off all those costs they might have and see, do they think that they'd be eligible? There's no harm in applying for it, basically.
But Claire, there is the other implication in terms, the cynical among us might say, well, it's in the government's interest not to inform people too much about how eligible you might be for a medical card. And surely a public health information campaign should be launched, maybe making that very point that certainly I wouldn't have occurred to me either. I'd have tended to look at the gross figure that I earn every year as regards my eligibility for a medical card. I wouldn't have been cognizant of the fact that I can discount or offset all these other expenses. And then that figure is the one that will ultimately count for my eligibility for the medical card.
Yes, and I mean, I do have to say that this research was part, it's funded from a work programme in the SRI that's partially funded by the Department of Health, so the departments themselves are interested and are funding this work. I do agree that I think, you know, the more attention that it gets and the more coverage that it gets, the better. We see when the government rolled out the age-based card, so, you know, the GP card, so you can go to the GP for free if you're under 6 and over 70, there's pretty much full take-up of those cards. Nearly 100% of people who are eligible are taking them up. And that could be because maybe there's more awareness drawn to the cards, and they're also easier to apply for. There's only one rule, you have to be under a certain age, and that's it. So I do think, you know, it's good that this work is out there and will hopefully draw attention to the fact that, you know, people might go online and have a look at the limits and find that they're actually eligible. And as I said, yes, you have to fill in a form, but it doesn't, you know, cost anything by your time, so it's well worth having a look at the forms and thinking would you be eligible. And you're right in that what we found is that groups of people are less likely to take up the card. Self-employed people, so they may, you know, incorrectly believe that they're not self-employed. So, you know, self-employed people are one group. As well, we found higher levels of education also tended to be less likely to take up the card. So again, you know, because they're you know, they're working or they've got higher education levels, that they're discounted from the card. That's certainly not the case.
I'm just wondering, Claire, when you mentioned that, is there the old stigma element to it? That
exactly.
if I'm on a medical card, it means I'm poor. So it's not for me, darling, because we come from a well-off, or we're not in that particular a socio-economic marginalised cohort. Is there a certain snobbishness, I wonder, around the idea of having a medical card?
I think there is, and I think maybe people certainly might feel some stigma in applying. So what we did find is that people who are getting nearly all of their income or most of their income from social welfare are more likely to apply. So it could be that they feel less stigma just because they have had to go through, you know, the system of say, getting unemployment payments or disability payments or whatever they might be. So they're already sort of in the system. So there might be less stigma there. But it might also point to a lack of awareness. So someone, if you're already getting benefits, you may be sort of informed, well, you know, here's a medical card form, you should apply for that as well. Whereas if they aren't getting any sort of benefits but are on low income in work, then a lot of them could still be eligible, but they, you know, they don't. So there is certainly a stigma. I mean, the application now, as I said, can be done online. Your just doctor has to fill that in. So I would encourage, I mean, you know, I think it's close to 40% of people in the country hold a medical card. When you think about all those costs that people would face, the high housing costs, high childcare costs, you know, I think that might destigmatise it a bit when people realise that it's really, you know, taking off all those costs as well. It's not, you know, maybe less of a stigma there. So I certainly would encourage people to go out and have a look at the form.
31% of eligible individuals not taking up a medical card. I tell you, there'll be people rushing to scrutinise their income today and in terms of what they can offset again. Just very briefly, Claire, give me some of the things they can offset again.
So you can allow your housing costs. So if you've got a mortgage or rent, you can allow that against your income. Your childcare costs, which for some can be very substantial. Your travel to work costs, and also things like home insurance costs. They can all be disallowed. So, you know, they might be substantial for some people and put them under the income limit. What I'd say is have a look on citizensinformation.ie or have a look on the HSE website. There's a full list of all the costs you can allow there on the application form.
All right, I think that's amazing, because if you look at mortgage costs and if you look at the other costs that you've mentioned there, some people might end up and say, hey, I'm not earning anything, actually.
Yes, I know, you know, it looks $384 a week if you see it initially for a couple with three kids, but if you take off all those costs that people face, so I'm going around and trying to draw attention to this.
Well, I think you've done a remarkable job in that this morning, because I think there will be thousands of people out there saying, Jesus Christ, I have been operating on a gross sum that I earn, we'll say, 30,000 a year. But sure, when I discount all those costs, I'm lucky if I have enough to feed the family, and
yes,
I'm entitled to a medical card. So the website again is?
And so you can, there's a lot of information on the citizensinformation.ie website, or you can see to get the form from there, or also from the hse.ie. If you put, you know, medical card application into Google, it shows up there as well. And as well, it's worth bearing in mind that, say you're just over that limit, say you look at all your costs and you're a few, you know, you're 10 or 20 euro over, there are also GP visit cards available for people whose incomes are sort of 50% higher than the limit. So it doesn't cover everything a medical card covers, does free access to a GP. So, you know, with average costs of around 55 euro per visit, that can also be a substantial benefit to people. And remember as well, if you qualify, your entire family qualifies.
I think you've just been canonised, Dr. Claire Keane, because in terms of, you've done the state some service there, in terms of there'll be people out there scrambling, because we would all have assumed that the medical card is only for people who are on very marginal incomes or whatever else. But now people will sit down and start doing their Visit the Citizens Advice website to find out whether you're eligible for a medical card, because it seems that while 40% of the population are on it, 33% of people who are eligible, according to the ESRI, are not bothering to take up that option, which is crazy. Could cost you hundreds and hundreds of euro more a year in medical costs. Mark Regan of TCD, UCD and the ESRI, Dr. Brendan Walsh of the ESRI and TCD, and Dr. Claire Keane, our guest this morning of the ESRI and TCD, the authors of that report. And how valuable is that? Claire, have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you, Seth. Thanks a lot.
Thank you indeed for that. How informative was that, folks?
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
We covered the safety issues been raised by some residents of the area around Digby Bridge yesterday with news of the double-decker that crosses the bridge. We had Sean McLaughlin on, and we have an update on that, Owen.
Yeah, indeed. And as you said, Clem, residents around the Digby Bridge area saying that Kildare County Council's traffic calming proposals don't go far enough. Locals raising concerns about the volume of traffic on the Carra route and the speed limit approaching the narrow bridge. The limit at the moment is 80 kilometres an hour. Locals want that drop to 60 kilometres an hour. The council declined to do so and also rejected requests for rumble strips or speed bumps. But we asked Kildare County Council for a statement, and we got that yesterday, and it is as follows. The Municipal District Office received a number of queries and representations through our customer service portal, raising concerns around interaction between pedestrian and traffic movements. Following a motion raised by Councillor Pádraig McAvoy at a Municipal District meeting, it was agreed that the location would be examined with the intention of installing additional lining and signage. An examination of the location determined that two additional slow markings would be installed on the road, and an additional pedestrian sign would also be installed on the approach to the bridge from either side. A request made for a reduced speed limit, rumble strips and a pedestrian crossing cannot progress at this location, which is in a rural area, and the introduction of both are not permitted under the national guidelines. It was determined that the ditch on the approach from the Clane side acts as a natural traffic calming measure. Slowing vehicles and stepping it back or removing it may increase speed or traffic approaching the bridge. The statement goes on to say, road resurfacing works have been carried out on the Clane side of Digby Bridge, with the contractor due to complete the surface dressing and lining, which will include the additional slow marking which were agreed would be installed. It should also be noted that the Municipal District Office has not been made aware of any accidents or had concerns raised by An Garda Síochána. And that was the statement that we received yesterday afternoon.
All right, okay, that's the situation on Digby Bridge. Anyway, for people who don't know it, the idea of a double-decker bus crossing, I'm just intrigued as to how it's even fit. It even fits. Yeah, there will be concerns around that. The main thing is, if you're approaching that from either side, be very, very careful and slow down, please. And indeed, that message, of course, applies wherever you're driving or travelling, and be alert to pedestrians and cyclists. I have to say, there's a lot of cyclists out there who think they own the road. And I'm particularly talking about those people who are doing it as a fitness, not your casual cyclist or whatever is going for work, but sometimes you come across groups of cyclists from clubs or whatever else, and they're travelling two abreast in a long, long line, making it very, very difficult for people to overtake them safely in relation to that. But anyway, that's a debate for another day. Just be careful, everyone. And we got an email from Simon Malley, who says that he has just completed a wheelchair challenge to push 300 kilometres to raise funds for mental health organisation AWARE. He completed his challenge on Wednesday, 30th of June. He pushed his wheelchair 1,207 kilometres and raised €3,207 in the process. And it's his intention now, Simon tells us, to do the same challenge next year in the month of May. That's quite a remarkable achievement, isn't it? And the fundraising push. Simon Malley, well done to you, doing his wheelchair push 1,207 kilometres across the month of May and raising €3,207 for AWARE. Well done, Simon. Keep up that good work in regards to that. Now, yesterday on this programme, we told you about the initiative, the launch of a brand new hub over at the services area in Monastereven and what that would achieve in regards to it. Very, very important one altogether, I have to say. The ESB unveiling its first 8-bay high-power electric vehicle charging hub at Junction 14, Mayfield, on the N7 in Monastereven. It's a high-power charging hub capable of providing 100 kilometres of charge in as little as 6 minutes. Indeed, you might have heard it on our news bulletins yesterday. We covered it here on the programme yesterday morning, but we said we'd have a more detailed chat about what's going on here. John Burney's head of ESB eCars. Good morning, John.
Morning, Clan. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you. Looking at it on the TV pictures last night, this is quite a bit of infrastructure.
Absolutely. It was yesterday we formally launched our 8-bay high-powered hub over in Junction 14 on the M7. And as you said, the chargers that we installed at that location are our latest technology, our highest energy transfer technology, and they can deliver approximately 100 kilometres of additional charge in as little as 6 minutes. So it's an exciting day for current EV drivers and future EV drivers on what is undoubtedly one of the busiest routes in the country.
And one of those chargers, John, can charge up to 8 electric vehicles at any one time.
So the facility can charge 8 vehicles at any one time. Each charger is capable of charging 2 cars.
Oh yeah, sorry, the bay will contain 3 high-power chargers of 350 kilowatts and 1 fast charger of 50 kilowatts, and they can charge combined up to 8 electric vehicles at any one time.
Correct, exactly.
Now, the problem, of course, John, in the slower than maybe desired take-up of electric cars, and we talked with the Society of the Motor Industry on their latest figures during the week, and while there has been an increase in take-up, the real concern for people is what has often been referred to as the lack of charging infrastructure.
So, yeah, what we're trying to do is address that through this investment fund. So the investment that we made at Junction 14 yesterday is part of a wider investment. It's a €20 million fund. It's co-funded by the Irish government under the Climate Action Plan and indeed ourselves, ESB. And what it aims to do is upgrade 1,450 charge points right around the country. And we have done about 600 of those upgrades so far under this programme of works. But of more importance, I think, to EV drivers, both the current stock and all people considering buying an EV, is that this money will also build up to 50 new hubs. So yesterday, while it's a super hub, we've also built 7 smaller hubs right around the country, in Galway, in Westmead, in Dublin. And the plan is that we will continue to build these hubs out over the next 18 to 24 months. We conduct customer surveys with our EV drivers, and the two things that pop up most regularly are more charging facilities and faster charging speeds, and that's what we're trying to address under this investment proposal.
Well, these are the two things indeed. By the way, will you tell me, if I pull into a place like Mayfield Services there on the M14, and regards to Liam Fitzpatrick and the entire team of the Lighten Group there, they're open about 10 years ago, how do I pay for this?
Yeah, so at the minute, as an introductory offer, it's free. But normally it is, you would pay to use it.
So I can pull into the M7 at the moment at Mayfield in Monastrevin and charge my electric vehicle free?
That's just an introductory offer.
Right.
It'll probably end next week. It's been going on for maybe 2 weeks. So.
But in the normal scheme of things then, how do people pay when they charge?
Yeah, so when they register with ESB, they get a card, an RFID card, and they use that card similarly as you would use a touch-and-go card to start a charging session, and that will charge your account. You can also use the app. We have an eCard Connect app, which also will allow the charging session to charge, or to start, I should say, and will be charged for the energy you use.
Pardon my ignorance here, but is the ESB is not the only operator, I presume, installing these charging points around the country, or are you?
No, there are some other operators in the market, but none would be quite as extensive or have the national sort of framework or coverage that the ESB has at the moment.
Well, you have that advantage, of course, being the premier provider. You actually control the infrastructure in this country. Now, one point that we would touch on, you picked Mayfield. Was there a particular reason for picking that location for the national launch?
There was a couple of reasons, actually. One, it's the first time we've built the Super Hub, which is an 8-bay charging hub. It has our latest technology, which is the high-powered charging technology, and it's on one of the busiest routes in the country. So we have an excellent working relationship with the Leiden Group. They're 10 years old this year, as you said yourself, I think, previously. So it made sense to work with them to build that piece of infrastructure at that location. It's also extremely visible. The Cork-Dublin Road out of Dublin is obviously extremely busy. It's a natural stop-off point for many making their way down to the country for holidays or on business. So we had a single charger there, and we saw that it was being utilised on a full-time basis. So that also contributed to the decision to expand the facility there.
All right, exciting times indeed, and certainly, as we'll say, the one concern people have had all along in terms of electric vehicles and whether I should plunge it or not is both the availability of charge points and in terms of, you know, how much extra distance or what distance will I get for my charge as well. But you can see the technology developments going on that very widely in regards to that. So good luck with that, John Byrne, head of ESB eCars. Thanks for joining us this morning on that particular topic. And indeed, good luck to everyone at the Mayfield Service Station Services Area in Monastrevin as well. Bit of history made there yesterday in relation to that one.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, earlier in my chat with Dr. Claire Keane and medical cards, a listener rang in and wanted to know whether college students are allowed to have a medical card if they're working part-time. Unfortunately, that's not a question I would have been able to put to Claire because she would not have been in a position to be able to answer it. But maybe we'll see if we can get the answer whether college students are allowed to have a medical card if they are working part-time. I imagine they would. And when Claire said this, when Claire told us during our chat that you can discount so many things, your mortgage payments, your childcare, your household costs, when you take all that off your annual income, there's thousands of people out there who are eligible for medical card who might have thought that they weren't. It's not to do with your gross income. It's not even to do with your net income after the government takes their bucketful out of your pay packet every month. You need then to add up, what does my mortgage cost me? What does my house insurance cost me? What does any other costs pertaining to the house cost me? If I have childcare costs, what does it cost me? You might find, have I any money left afterwards in regards to that? So go on to the Citizens Advice website, Google that, and see what you can do. There must be tens of thousands. Well, there are, because the SRI report said that 33% of people who are eligible for medical card are not taking it up. Time to get checking, lads. Ben rang and loves the show. He said the standing charge on your ESB bill covers the cost of bringing the electricity to your house, ESB stations, poles, lines, meter boxes, manpower. But how often do we have to pay for it, lads? You know, forever, is it like? I mean, I haven't seen any new poles go up in my estate recently. Or, well, I know there are maintenance charges and everything else. What are we paying tax for, by the way? You know, the lump that's taken out of your wages between 25 and 50% every month, depending on how much you earn. What are we paying that for? I suppose like the road tax. Where does that go? Into some big hole or otherwise in regards to that? I thought that income tax was about paying for the services that the government kindly provides for us. But what about all the stealth taxes? The VAT, the public service charges on your ESP bills and everything else that comes in that we pay. You know, at the end of the day, people think, I'm paying a 40% tax rate. When you add in what you pay in VAT and public service charges and everything else, I think that most people in this country are paying 60, 70% tax when it's all computed. So everybody should be eligible for a medical card at that rate. Okay. What else have I for the moment? Interesting topic that I'll have for you in a minute or two. It's in regards to new EU regulations now, which are banning the use of single-use plastics. A range of everyday items made from single-use plastics, such as cutlery, plates and straws, have been banned from Irish shelves. I'll tell you more about that in a while, but let's go to the Clane Maynooth Municipal District with Owen.
Yeah, thank you, Clem. And joining me on the line is Fine Gael councillor Brendan Weld of the Clane Maynooth MD. Brendan, welcome to the programme and good morning.
Thanks, Owen. Thank you very much.
Looking at the motions that you brought then to that meeting, we'll start off with a question that you had for the council. You were asking them to consider providing a pedestrian crossing between the village of Coyle Dove and the credit union. What response did you get in relation to it?
I'm looking for a pedestrian crossing. Maybe, more so maybe on the other road, on the heading for Robertstown, because of all the new housing estates there, and I'm getting complaints that it's not safe for children to cross now to the national school. But again, it all comes down to funding. We're told there's no funding for this, and it's something we may have to look at our property tax.
Second question then, can the council provide an update on the improvements to be carried out at Mangan's Cross, Timahoe? What's the issues there?
Well, there was a number of accidents there, bad accidents. So the situation is that the design is done. It's coming before the members in September for a part eight, and then it'll be a public consultation. But we expect to have that done very year. We hope to have that completed by the end of the year. Okay. The improvements, the Mangan's Cross, Timahoe.
Okay, Brendan. And then finally, you had a motion as well brought forward at number 33 on the floor that the council provide an extension to the cemetery at Cloncurry. Now, this is an issue that we've been contacted by a number of listeners, not only at this cemetery, but different cemeteries around the county as well.
Well, the situation here is, I suppose, really, I have been looking for an extension as well. It's a Newtown cemetery, Newtown Kilcock. But we're finding it very hard to get suitable land because of high water table there. And we've also to look at Cloncurry Cemetery. The council are actively engaged in discussions about an extension to Cloncurry Cemetery. The Director of Environment was out with me there recently, and we looked at it, and we were in a number of cemeteries in Urquhart there that may need extensions. I'd be very positive about Cloncurry.
Just remind us where Cloncurry is, Brendan.
It's on the old Kilcock Enfield Road.
Right.
And it's an area that it's a very historic cemetery, Cloncurry Cemetery, and great history to it. But as I say, we're looking at and are very anxious about trying to get an extension for Newtown Cemetery. And if because of environmental issues we don't get an extension to Newtown. If we don't get an extension to Newtown, Cloncurry may become the cemetery for that whole area.
Response that you got from the council is that it's actively pursuing an extension to the existing cemetery.
I'm led to believe that the landowners there are quite willing to negotiate with Kildare County Council and help them out in any way they can. And
okay.
Thank them for that.
Okay, and we'll keep abreast of those issues as they develop. But for the moment, Fine Gael councillor on the Clane Maynooth MD, Brendan Weld. Thanks for that, Brendan.
Thanks. Owen. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Back okay, that's been done well. Thank you, Owen, for that. Now, in regards to, we said about those single-use plastics, I want to talk about that for a moment because it's quite significant development. Banned from Irish shelves, cotton bud sticks, plastic cutlery, plates, stirrers and straws. Stirrers, you know, the yolks that are given to stir your coffee or stir your drink or whatever else. A range of everyday items made from single-use plastics have been banned under the EU Single-Use Plastics Directive from 2019. Member states such as Ireland were compelled to introduce measures combating waste of such items by July the 3rd. That's a couple of days ago. According to the Department of the Environment, cotton bud sticks, cutlery, plates, stirrers, chopsticks, straws, expanded polystyrene single-use food and beverage containers, and all oxo-degradable plastic products, those are the ones that break into tiny pieces but never go away, are now banned. The EU says that up to 70% of marine litter in Europe's waters is from single-use plastics. In addition to the banning of single-use plastics such as plates and straws, producers of wet wipes, tobacco products containing plastic, that's like the cigarette ends, the tips, in other words, are plastic, sanitary items and cups, now have to add markings or stickers on the packaging, informing consumers that the waste must not be flushed down the toilet because of the impact on marine life. A do not flush symbol on the stickers is accompanied by a turtle in a separate box shown as impacted by the flushed item in its environment. These items will not be allowed on Irish shelves after July 3rd unless they are in compliance with this rule, according to the department. More items that are familiar to Irish consumers also fall under the new rules, but will have 3 more years before they are affected. Beverage producers will also be banned from placing any SUP, polyethylene, unless it contains our, bottles. These are a type of plastic bottle up to 3 litres in size on the Irish market from January 2025, unless it contains a minimum of 25% recycled plastic. Containers such as bottles and cartons that are up to 3 litres inside will be banned from the Irish market from July 3rd, 2024, unless its cap is attached to the main part of the container. Beverage producers will also be banned from placing any SUP polyethylene bottles up to 3 litres inside on the Irish market from January 2025. And that's a chemical name for polyester, by the way, that PET, and is the durable and clear lightweight plastic we see every day on bottles such as soft drinks. What about balloons, wet wipes and fishing gear, Owen?
Yeah, also by the 5th of January 2023, producers of tobacco products that contain certain plastic will be subject to an EPR scheme. And by the 31st of December 2024, producers of balloons, wet wipes and fishing gear will also be subject to an EPR scheme. An EPR scheme essentially stands for Extended Producer Responsibility and is where producers have the responsibility to finance the collection and environmentally sound waste management of their products at the end of life. Irish beaches and seas can now expect to become cleaner as single-use plastics are banned in Ireland, according to Ireland South MEP Deirdre Clune. She's quoted as saying, "Single-use plastics can cause a lot of damage to the environment. These products are used once and then thrown away and are likely to end up in our seas, which cause damage. I welcome the ban on these items, and the EU is aiming to become a forerunner in the global fight against marine litter and plastic pollution." So a lot of changes coming in over the next couple of years, Clem.
And it starts with each one of us as an individual that we might, please don't flush stuff down the toilet unless it's natural stuff emanating from yourself and your nether regions. But do not put wet wipes down because they cause these fat bungs or whatever they call them, and they block up sewage and everything else. Wet wipes are highly toxic to the environment. So please, maybe stop using them. You know, use tissues instead in regards to that. Now, I know that's kind of difficult because can you imagine the state of the place now, a year and a half into the pandemic, where wet wipes by the million, and I mean, we use them in here, we have to use them to wipe down equipment and worktops and stuff like that, and every workplace in the country. But can you imagine the tsunami of wet wipes that are going, please dispose of them properly, which is in a proper landfill, proper rubbish bin. Do not flush them down the toilets or babies' nappies or anything like that. And try and use less plastic. When you go to the supermarket, would you leave the plastic there? Unwrap the goods, because the retailers have to get rid of it for you. And in fairness, many of the multiples are now taking measures themselves to reduce the levels of plastic. So finally for this morning, another great news night for Kildare Hurling last night. Following Tuesday night's dramatic under 20 win over Wexford, the minor hurlers beat Laois last night 216 to 15 points in St Connaught's Park. Liam Dempsey scored 14 points for the under 20s last night, or on Tuesday night. Last night's scoring star was Fionn Maher. He had 9 points in total. Kildare will meet Wexford next, I think. And watching the game for us was Pat Costello. Pat, good game, good performance.
Well, whatever about football coming home, Clem, hurling has certainly found a new home in the Shortgrass County in Dilly Whiteland. And I suppose the likes of Jack Wall and Pat Dunney and Tommy Carew would say it was always there, because they were competing, while they were playing, they were competing with the highest level, and now Kildare are competing at the highest level once again. Another good win for a Kildare team, this time the minors. Probably didn't reach the heights of the 20s the previous night, but still it was a good performance. They got a great start with a goal after 4 minutes by James Dolan. He was to get a second one just before half time. Two crucial goals, you might say, because a goal in the first 4 minutes of any game, it certainly gives you a platform. And just as it appeared that Laois might be coming back, coming up to half time, they were playing against the wind, but James Dolan was there again to this time kick this litter to the back of the net. So that gave it a 2-8 to 6 point lead, 8 points at that stage. And Laois never really, I suppose, got it back any closer than about 5 points. And each time they did, yes, Dan, you spoke about Fionn Maher, stepped up, some great scoring by him, but 2 from play, and I think it was 6 from freeze, and 1 from a sideline cut that Joe Canning would be very, very proud of. And now, another great night for Kildare, but you'd have to worry about Laois. That's the second year in a row that they've gone out at the first attempt, and they have Derek McGrath in the backroom team.
You know? My God, the former Waterford manager. Here's what manager Owen Stapleton told Pat afterwards.
You're nervous going into it because you don't fully know where you sit in the pecking order. They did what we asked them. They're a good bunch of honest kids, the 32. They're an excellent bunch to work with. So I thought that we got the basics right. We kind of expected the lads to play a sweeper, and we had prepared the boys for that. That kind of went okay. Thought the work rate was great. Distribution was good at times, but they're a fine bunch of kids, and they weren't for letting up today. We know in the dressing room at half time that they weren't letting up. They were tuned in, and they weren't for giving it back to them. So it was great. No, I was happy with that.
Yeah, there were times it seems as if the pace dropped
that's exactly the problem. You're just pushing the lads just to keep the momentum going, because the water breaks do catch you. Overall, very happy with that now.
And again, a great free taker last night, Fionn Maher.
Fionn's a good kid. He practices, though. And Alan Tobin, for the long ones, they all practice. You know, so they're first to training. With the two goalkeepers and the two free takers are first to training. They're about 20 minutes for the rest of us. And that's what you're looking for with these kind of kids, you know.
Yeah, I've talked to you a number of times. You're always, I suppose, talking up these players and how dedicated they are.
Ah, they're great. Listen, the under-14 trials last week had 160 kids turn up from over 20 clubs, and that development squad was nurtured down to maybe 80, and there's 18 clubs in the 80. Like, we had 3 teams in the minor championship, 2 in the Celtic Challenge and 1 here, so we're trying to stretch another 80 through the pipeline and keep them all hurling so they go back to their clubs better. And then clubs will love it too, because we're giving them games. Like, hopefully one of the Celtic Challenge teams can win a cup or a shield, and hopefully we can keep going. And then what we have then is keep building the pathway. You saw last night's job is to put lads into the senior panel. Our job is to put lads. We had 7 from last year's minor team inside in that panel last night. So that's our job, keep that pathway moving through. And these lads were thrilled. It's easy to show the pathway when they can see the young fellas from last night coming on. Nearly all the subs who came on last night were all the young kids.
Remarkable numbers, Pat, aren't they?
Unbelievable. And it just shows you the work that's going on under Colm Nolan, chairman of the hurling committee. Listening to Owen Stapleton there, as I have a number of times, spoken to a number of times, it's the same message you get from David Herity. It's the same message you get from Pat English. This is all about getting the players on the pathway to be senior players, but not only that, to, I suppose, improve and develop the players as persons themselves, and then to develop the players as, I suppose,
something for the club.
But 80 plus players, what did they say, 80 or 100 something from 18 different clubs?
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing. And the south of the county is starting to produce players, you know, more free and lower down. So,
I tell you one thing, Pat, I would love to see a scenario back where it was in the 60s and in the early 70s where clubs like Castle Dermot provided players to the county team. I remember the Deerings and that, Johnny Corran, of course, and also a tie. And the tie in the mid-60s winning a county senior title, or at least contesting a final, and even in the 80s the contributing players to an All-Ireland B winning Kildare team. It would be great, because there's a complete dearth of representatives once you go below Naas. Moorfield, Sarsfields have come on huge in the hurling front, so it's great to see that. Listen, well done last night, Pat, another great job.
Well, there you go. Just thinking back there, you'd remember those matches back in those days. I'm too young for them.
All right.
I'll keep it going now. Wexford next Tuesday, next Wednesday, and of course, it's under-20s allowed on Tuesday as well. So, hurling is alive and well, and of course, the big one on Saturday, the Christy Ring. So, lots of things happen.
And before that, Pat, you'll be on duty for us in St. Conlon's Park for the minor football as well. Pat Costello, great job last night. Thanks, Pat. Meanwhile, the women are in action against Roscommon on Sunday. The game throws in at 2:00. They've announced their team. Erica Burke is back in the panel. Roisin Byrne is named, but she won't be playing any part in the championship. And regards to you, Roisin, who's had surgery on her knee injury from the recent match, and we wish you well. You will be back, because you're too good a player not to be. Don Fitzpatrick tells us Trina Duggan is injured. She's named for the match, I think, but not sure whether she'll play or not. No, in fact, she is named. I don't know if she's named in the panel, but we'll bring you that team anyway on our sports bulletins today and also in tomorrow morning's preview as well with Tommy Callaghan. John Dee, I'll bring you that message about Simon Malley tomorrow. I'm just over time. And yes, I agree with the sentiments expressed in it. I'll mention it on tomorrow morning's programme. Thanks to producer Owen Beattie, to Kieran Noble and yourselves. John Dunn is up next with the 11 to 2 show. Have a good day. Let's go to the newsroom and Ciara Plunkett.